Welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary, the happening place to be every Tuesday. The only thing better than that is Hebrew Club, because it takes real intellectual horsepower to be able to comprehend Hebrew syntax, especially if it's right. Yes, right. Oh, but I'm not worthy. All right, we are in Galatians, and we're reading, I believe we sort of brushed over verse 17, Galatians chapter 4, verse 17. So let's pick up there. The apostle writes, Zelusen humas u kalos, ala ekklesai humas thelusen, hina autus zeluta. Now we've got several uses of zelao here. It means to be zealous for somebody in the accusative, or to eagerly seek someone in the accusative, or something in the accusative. So in verse 17, the they is the other teachers in Galatia, right? So the circumflex over the diphthong there is a result of the vowel contraction from zelao. Otherwise, it looks pretty much like an ordinary present indicative, which it is, active third person plural, right? They are seeking you. Ou kalos is a kind of a typical Greek adverb, right, with the omega, sigma, and the circumflex. Kalos, as you know, means noble or good, and here nobly or for a good motive or something like that. So, come in late, you got to sit next to the teacher. So, all right, we're all friends here. Hetairai, right? So they are seeking you not nobly or not with good motive, Paul says, Galatians 4:17. Rather, now it occurred to me for the first time, I've read this verse a bunch of times in my life, that there's actually a grammatical ambiguity here. It's normally translated, rather, thelus, and they wish, and fellow will often take a complimentary infinitive as here, from ekkleo, which means to shut out or to exclude. They wish to exclude you. But it occurred to me that it could actually be read a different way. Anybody have a suggestion?
They wish you to exclude?
Exactly. Yeah, there would be nothing to prevent you from reading humas as the accusative subject of the infinitive. They wish you to exclude. Okay. Now, I think the sense probably, you know, supports the traditional reading, but in my head, you know, they want you to exclude us. I mean, if you were going to fill in the gap that way, that would also make, you know, tolerable sense, I think. Because there is a gap, no matter how you read it. They want to exclude you, and then you have to fill in the gap from what, right? And under any translation, it's probably from fellowship with Paul, from adherence to his teaching, or something like that, right? So I guess we can take it the traditional way. So humas there would be the accusative direct object of the infinitive ekklesai, right? But rather, they wish to exclude you in order that, probably purpose as it often is in Paul, in order that you might zealously seek them, right? And so again, Paul is, earlier on in this little paragraph, you remember he's appealed to their former experience where they took him in when he had a physical weakness, and now there's an alienation that's going on. So, good. So more forms of zelao than you'd ever like to see, and there's a couple more coming. Any questions about verse 17? So, okay, good. Verse 18. Kalandad zelustai en kalo pantata kai me manan en to par enaima pros humas. The infinitive is zelustai, could parse as what voice? Two options here. Stai ending could be middle or passive. It's normally taken here as passive. Burton's commentary actually suggests that there is no example of the middle voice of zelao anywhere in the Greek literature that he's read. He didn't have computers, but he was pretty smart, you know. So to be sought, take it as, or to go on being sought, present infinitive passive, kalon, is good. You have to supply the verb. And this would be a kind of a typical construction. Something is good. Something is necessary. Something is whatever. It's a kind of a typical Greek construction with the infinitive as the subject of a linking verb clause. To be sought is good in respect to a good thing, or maybe in a good way, always, pantata. And not only, now we have something that you don't actually see that often in the New Testament, en, we have an articular infinitive, en to par enai. So par enai is from par e me, which means to be present. Okay? And en to plus the infinitive often has, anybody, what kind of a force in the New Testament? It's often temporary, right? It's a time clause, and often translated while. So literally, in the act of me being present, or more idiomatically in English, while I am present, because the me is the accusative case subject of the infinitive. Okay, isn't this fun? I mean, sitting up here on a fall day on the third floor, above the cafeteria line reading Greek. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, except when you come to Hebrew Club, because Hebrew is a superior language. Right. I'm trying to do penance here. So that's right. Well, he's my boss now. He's my boss. Right. So. Notice an extra accent on the par enai. That's because meh is in clitic, a little personal pronoun there. And when the rule is, when you have a circumflex on the antepenult, you need to add an accent to take care of that little enclitic orphan. Do you care about this? No, that's sort of why we're not going to pause over this. While I am prosumos with you. So, putting it all together, to be sought in a good way is always a good thing, and not only while I am with you. See? So, and Paul is absent, and he's seeking them now. Right? That's the force. So, I'm doing a good thing here by reaching out to you with this letter. Questions about verse 18. Dave,
because
yes.
With the infinitive par enai, and then we have pros. Is the rule that whenever you have pros with the stative verb, that it's with? Is there like an actual rule for that?
There isn't a rule, but you're actually. Are you? Is John 1:1 lurking in your mind? Actually, yeah, because we covered. No, yeah. See, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Word was with God. There, with is pros plus the accusative, right? And so Wallace actually suggests this, that when you have a stative verb and a preposition that normally has a sense of motion or action to it, like pros, that the verb sort of neutralizes the force of the preposition, right? And so, Dave, you get the Wallace Award for the day. Right. And actually, I think it's a very good observation that he makes. Yeah. And so you wouldn't translate toward you, but here, with you. Very good. Excellent. So don't the rest of you wish you had thought of that? Ha, ha, ha. Any more questions about verse 8? So apparently the people who listen to Greek Club on the internet really like my sense of humor. So I'm trying to play up that part of it, hoping they'll send me money. Verse 19. Technamu. No, the imagery here gets really interesting. Technamu, verse 19. Hus palen odino mechris hu morphothe Christos en humin. My children. Technon is the dictionary form. Just because he's talking to them, you'd have to parse techna as how?
Neuter
plural. Right, it would have to count as a vocative form, even though there's no separate vocative, right? My children. Now, I had to look this up. Odino means to be in labor. It's the same verb that, well, actually, in Romans 8, Paul puts a sun on the front of it, so it's sun odino, but to labor together with the creation as it waits for the consummation of the age. But and it takes a direct object in the accusative. I had to look that up. I wasn't quite sure. So, in English, we'd have to say, with whom, whose, again, I am laboring. Okay. Notice the image. I mean, he actually, if you fill in the blanks of the metaphor, Paul is the mother here, right? And he's giving birth to children, although he's having to do it again. I mean, it's a striking image, and it's probably supposed to be, right? This is how serious the error in Galatia is. So my children, with whom again I am laboring. Mekris who goes together. It's kind of an idiom. You don't have to do something separate with the who, with the relative pronoun. It just means until. Okay. Christ, now from morpho-o. This would be the aorist subjunctive passive. And the circumflex actually on the ultimate might help you with the parsing a bit. Aorist subjunctive passive, third singular. Until Christ is formed, is morpho-o, in you or among you. Right? Again, very striking imagery, and one can't help believe that when they heard this read, you know, it really caught them up short. This is serious business. Grammatically, it's pretty straightforward, I think. Questions about verse 19? Yeah, please, Tyler.
Well, this isn't grammatical or anything.
Go ahead.
Nowadays, if someone were to write to people of our time in that way, you would think they would dismiss it instead. They wouldn't, you know.
Yeah.
That would be pretty darn.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, if you're an apostle, you get to do what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a holy apostle, right? Yeah, an apostle not from man nor through a man, but by through God the Father and the Lord Jesus Christ who raised him from the dead, blah, blah, blah. Jim?
Did Hus get malified just because he's talking to a collective of men?
Yes. Yeah. The Hus is masculine because it's a group, right?
Okay.
Yeah, it's the generic use of the masculine. Right, exactly right. And again, it is a relative pronoun. Remember, the rule is when you see a rough breathing mark and an accent on a little word that begins with O, it's probably a relative pronoun, right? So, yeah, good. It does actually help. It's not always possible, but if you can learn to read Greek or Hebrew out loud and pronouncing consistently, I mean, you'll find that over the years it actually helps your learning, your retention, absolutely everything. And again, it doesn't really matter if you say A or I, as long as you do it consistently, right? And that's a good skill to try to develop. It takes time. So, good. Other questions about verse 19? Okay, now we get an interesting thing that doesn't happen much in the New Testament. Verse 20. Ethalanda parenai prosimas. Notice he just said he's not present, but now... I was wishing to be present. So, ethalon de par enai prosumas arte, kai alaxai tain phonemu, hati apo rumai en humin. Now, morphologically, ethalon is from thelo. Now, why does that look funny? If it's actually, what is it? It's an aorist. No, it's an imperfect indicative.
Okay. Because it's from othello?
It's very close. It's actually from athelo.
Oh.
The original stem is athelo. Now, in the New Testament, the a has dropped off, but when you go to augment, it augments to eta rather than epsilon for some... Well, it's due to the historical development of the Greek language.
They used that word a lot or something, and they just got used to it?
They just got used to it, yeah. Yeah, there was a grammar law that was passed in Athens. And they said, we're going to do this forever. That's right, yeah. So, literally, I was wishing to be present with you. Okay, now this is actually an idiom. Apparently, I had to look this up. Apparently, in older Greek, you would have the word atha on the front of it, which is an interjection that means, oh, that. What we actually have here is a wish, believe it or not. See, the past indicatives of fellow and o fellow and some of these verbs can, especially the imperfect, can be used to express a wish that did not come true. It's a kind of a fine point of syntax.
Is that what distinguishes it from the optative?
You could, yes. If you were going to use just a straight optative, then the fulfillment of the wish would still be a possibility. Yep. And so this is normally translated... oh, that I were with you. And it's not too far off. Literally, it's I was wishing to be present. Right? So it's not too far off on the straight translation. But this is actually one of the fairly few instances in the New Testament of this kind of wish expressed by an imperfect using fellow, right? So would that I were present with you, and there's the par enai with the pros again, now, and would that I were alasso, alasso means to change, okay? Kat alasso means to exchange. See, that's a salvation word in Paul at times. So, would that I were present with you now and to change, literally, my voice, because aporeo can occur in the active voice, according to the lexicon, but almost all the time in Christian literature in the middle, and it means to be perplexed. Aporeo or aporeomai means to be at a loss. Okay, and this is why in his one feeble attempt at humor, Dr. Wallace has the aporetic genitive, which is that when you can't decide and you're confused. So he calls that the aporetic genitive. So he's a good man. I mean, what do I know? He's written a grammar I haven't, right? So, for I am perplexed or I am at a loss. Notice the flexibility of N plus the dative. It doesn't make any sense to translate in you or among you. N plus the dative is virtually as flexible as the simple dative noun or pronoun. So here, probably just like a dative of respect. Could even be, the Holy Spirit just revealed this to me actually, it could be a causal. N plus the dative kind of have a causal force. I am perplexed because of you. That might work. So good.
Read that, translate that whole verse again.
I don't think I can. Well, would that I were with you now, and would that I were changing my voice.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, okay, so you'd have to do it something like that, I think. Just to kind of tack it on with the as a second infinitive after aethalon.
In other words, he wants to be talking more gently.
He wants to be talking to them differently than the way he's talking, right? Because I am perplexed because of you or in respect to you, something like that. Good. Okay. Great. All right, we'll go into the famous Hagar Sarah allegory, right? Verse 21. Legatemoi, hoi hippanaman thelantas enai, tanaman uk akuita. So, imperative from lego. Could be an indicative. You are speaking to me. That doesn't make as much sense. Speak to me. Tell me. And now we actually have the subject. Hoi hippa naman thelantas enai. That whole thing is the subject. It would normally parse as masculine plural nominative, but because it's with legate, you, plural, you'd have to, I suppose, if you were forced to parse it by some evil New Testament person, it would parse as evocative, right? The ones, you who are the ones wishing under the law to be, right? They want to go back under the law of Moses, and as if those things were necessary now for justification. The law, do you, the law you hear, don't you? Remember that Uk, in a question, expects the positive answer. Now, I think it would make sense. Well, I guess with legata moi, it probably has to be a question, right? Would it make any sense? Tell me, you aren't hearing the law. You know, if you took akuata as a statement rather than a question, that doesn't fit as well. And so the tradition, as you can see, the punctuation is to take it as a question. And again, with uk, or a form of u, it would expect the answer yes. You are hearing the law, aren't you? And by the way, now Paul adduces the story from Genesis, right, of Hagar and Sarah and Mount Sinai and all that business. And so what does this teach us about the referent of nomos? Actually, it doesn't just refer to the commandments. It can refer to the entire narrative of the Pentateuch, right? And only the context can tell you in the New Testament when nomos, law, refers to the commandments in the Pentateuch, or when it occurs refers to sort of the whole narrative. I think that's what's going on at the end of Romans 3, by the way. Because, well, let's take a look at it, actually, Romans 3. It's not grammar per se, but we're maybe take a second. Romans 3, verse 29 or 30 or something like that, the very end. Romans 3, verse 31. Yeah. Therefore, are we nullifying the law through faith? And now, Adam, there's your optative, right? Me genoita, may it never be. Rather, we are establishing the law. And now, what does the law refer to? Well, he goes right into the narrative about Abraham. See? And so I think in that, I think Paul is kind of a segue there, is actually nomos refers to the narrative portion of the Pentateuch and not just to the commandments. So, okay, so with nomos and Paul, you kind of have, I mean, it generally refers, it rarely refers to laws in general. It almost always refers to the Sinai law or the Sinai-based Pentateuch, you know, but you just have to decide in each place whether it's commandments or narrative or both. So, okay, verse 21, okay, pretty straightforward grammar, right? Okay, 22. Gegrapti gar hati Abraham dua huius eschen, hena ektes paideskes, kai hena ektes eleutheras. For it stands written, there's the perfect passive indicative of grapho, so it was written and is in a written condition, right? For it stands written that Abraham, dua huius, so there's the accusative direct object, two sons, Eschen, had. From what dictionary form? Anybody? From echo, right? The third principal part of echo is eschon, right? One of my favorite Greek forms is the aorist subjunctive of echo. It's scho. See? Sounds like something that you put in your cheek. Yep, right? Abraham had two sons. One from the Paideskes. This is actually a diminutive form. This was a new thing I learned. I just looked it up and I thought, that's an odd form. I knew what it meant. But if you add iskos, iska, iskon, that's actually a way of taking a normal Greek noun and making it diminutive, right? Diminutive. That is to say, a young slave girl. Okay? So, the other way to do that is to add ion, like paideon. The other term that you actually see, I think in Mark's Easter story, is you have a neoniskos, a young man, who is there at the tomb. Right? So
it's got to be slave girl because it's contrasting with the last word there?
Yeah.
Because I didn't know that meant slave girl.
Yeah, and a pais, the basic root here is the word pais, which means servant.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And so this is a young female servant, right? One from the slave girl and the other from the freed, or the free young lady. Note the feminine ending, right? And of course the one is Hagar and the other is Sarah. So.
Another quick question there.
Yes.
It's the two sons, and then you're saying that one was from a slave. Oh, okay, I get it. Never mind.
Yep, good. I like it when people ask questions and then they answer it themselves in the middle of the question. Makes me look smart. Good. Okay, time to stop. Verse 22. We will pick up here. Verse 23. If you really are smart and care about language, come to Hebrew Club.